This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Dogs of New Brighton. Jess is of the view that there is no bad time for a snooze, unless it's meal time. We hope you are having a relaxing seaside summer. And recently, Jess had a relaxation massage from Kathleen Crisley of The Balanced Dog. This is part two of my conversation with Kathleen, who is a certified fear-free canine massage and rehabilitation therapist.
My sister does say to me that when she dies, she hopes she gets reincarnated as one of my dogs.
Part one of this conversation is online via plainsfm.org.nz or on iTunes. Here, I asked Kathleen whether there are dogs she can't work with, and her response was, absolutely.
Well-meaning owners may call me in, and the dog is actually not have proper pain management. Even the, you know, they're either not on meds at all for their pain, or they're not got the right mix of meds and the dog has still got a fairly high level of pain. It's not appropriate to work with a dog that's above what we call above threshold with that level of stress because they're uncomfortable. We wouldn't want it done for ourselves. It's not appropriate to force yourself on a dog that's in pain. And in fact, one of the motivations for me to become fear-free certified was I took a client in first appointment. They'd been seeing another practitioner in the physical therapy space. And in my intake questionnaire, she talked about how the staff there would muzzle the dog to have his therapy. And that is, again, opting in. You know, you're forcing ouchy procedures on an animal that can't express itself. You know, that snapping that dogs do is an escalation of a warning that they're not happy. So to suppress the behavior of that warning system with a muzzle is not appropriate because you're working an animal consistently above threshold. And what that served to do, that experience served to do, was the dog was already in a heightened state of anxiety before I even started working with it because it felt it knew what was coming. So I was at a deficit because I couldn't achieve what I wanted to with this dog. And the mind-body connection is incredibly powerful in these dogs. So anxiety breeds other stress and predisposes the animal to discomfort.
Yeah. So how do you explain that to the human in this relationship?
Yep. So there are things like, as you noticed, even with just the session, I periodically would ask you something or tell you what I was doing. I have to build a relationship with the dog as well as the owner. So foundation principles in my practice is I always want the owner home and I want the owner fully there in the room because most dogs get very good comfort from having the parent around. And I will explain to owners what I'm doing. I will explain that usually a first session is never the best because the dog is getting to know me, the owner is getting to know me. And by the second or third visit, a dog knows what I'm going to do. And so they're going to be more relaxed. One of the fundamental differences, I think, the way I was trained, as you know, you commented when I walked into your lounge that I'm using a full-size human massage table. Mm. There are people who will massage exclusively on the floor. I'm not a big supporter of that for a couple of reasons. The first is, in fear-free handling, we want to maintain contact with the dog, something called touch gradient. And you noticed when I had to walk around the table, I kept my one hand on Jess at all times. A human on the floor, physically, when they change position, cannot not take their hands off the animal, because you're going to have to either sit or get onto your knees or whatever. So you're already losing contact with the animal. The other thing is that physically, if you want a long career in animal massage, you cannot be affording not to look after your own spine. And kneeling and all that kind of stuff puts a lot of stress on your joints, and you just can't do it. There are certain dogs I will work on the floor with, ones that are extra large and just cannot be lifted. Dogs that are post-surgical, that obviously it would be cruel to lift them. But the vast majority of my clients, either myself lifting them alone or as you helped me with Jess to keep her spine in integrity, we can easily lift them up onto the table. And my table's a nice soft cover. Yeah. It's not a steel exam table. Mm. And that's the biggest difference.
Yes. So you mentioned sort of animal physio, but the term physiotherapy is actually restricted to humans, isn't it? So because I know there are practices around who kind of refer to themselves as sort of animal physio type things.
Yeah, so legally, you know, I had you sign a consent form of letting me work with her. So the point is, the Physiotherapy Board of New Zealand does not recognize the practice of animal rehab in any shape or form. And where it becomes blurry for consumers in New Zealand is that if someone holds a human physical therapy qualification, the Physiotherapy Board of New Zealand will happily turn the blind eye to the fact that they use the term physio in their marketing, their name, or anything that they describe. And that depends on whether they can have training in working with animals or not. Or if they employ staff, it doesn't necessarily mean that their staff are qualified.
Oh, okay.
And so I like to, because I trained in the U.S., which is very litigious, I like to be totally upfront about that, which is why I have a consent form at the beginning of bringing in a new client into my practice. Mm. And that way they understand, you know, you might in common terms tell your family tonight over the dinner table that Jess had physio today, and I have no problem with that, but you're just not going to see that because I just don't want the legal hassles of the Physiotherapy Board writing me nasty letters about how I'm not allowed to use the term. And so there are practitioners dotted around New Zealand who are in the physical rehab space. They also don't call themselves physios. And it's up to the consumer to understand who they're hiring to work with their animal and what level of qualifications they've got.
Right. Yeah. As well as this work, you also, I saw on your website, you do cakes and treats and things.
Yeah. Yep.
As you can tell, Jess likes treats.
Yeah.
What were you feeding her?
Well, I was feeding her my own liver treats. So again,
That got the seal of approval.
Yeah. So I mentioned my dog Daisy being my muse. So long before I trained in animal massage, she developed intolerance to certain food ingredients. And much the way we're taught, you know, the food pyramid and eating fresh, well, the same principles go with our dogs. And when you pick up a packet of some of these very shelf-stable treats that are sold all over the place, you know, from pet stores to vet practices to supermarkets to pet stores again, you will see that they're full of stuff that makes them shelf-stable. And so I started making my own treats. So my business actually started as a catering business, a niche baker for dogs. I've retained the cakes, the birthday cakes, because people enjoy celebrating their dog's birthday. And in fact, with our big revamp of our website just a few months ago, I've started what we call the birthday club. So owners from around the country can register their dog's birthday with us. I will be in touch with them in between 4 and 6 weeks in advance so they can plan their dog celebrations. Now, that could be just a cake, but I can do massage parties where the dog and their guests are massage for a brief massage just to introduce the concept to those owners. We can have a bake your own dog treat party where I'll supply the dough and they can bring out their own cutters or shapes or whatever they wish. That's a way of getting kids involved into the whole natural eating thing. And of course, we'll be bringing in progressively new stock around birthday themed celebrations, and that's where the cakes and things. But I pretty much feed my own liver treats to all my clients, because again, they're getting fresh.
And your current dog, she?
Yes.
Is a greyhound. What do you feed her?
So Izzy is on what I call a hybrid diet. So Izzy gets a grain-free kibble through some of her meals. She will get a freeze-dried, like a Ziwi Peak, in some of her meals. I cook for her, particularly in the winter months, because the warmth of a warm meal is actually quite useful and nourishing. That's why we tend to eat more soups and stews in the winter months than we do in the summer months. And she goes through phases of eating raw. So I transition her where, like, her one meal a day is in a raw food, and then her second meal a day will be in a kibble or a cooked format. And again, if you think about health, we want a variety of ingredients. I don't subscribe to feeding the same bag of food for years. And we know so much more about nutrition now than we did when kibble foods were introduced. Mm-hmm. So, and I always try, if a client asks me what they want to feed or what they should feed, there's a whole series of questions I ask them about their budget. And my principle of feeding is always about getting the best possible food that fits your budget and lifestyle. Yep. So Izzy, she's a greyhound.
Yeah.
She's an ex-racer. Most of the greyhounds you see around Christchurch will be from the racing industry, whether they raced and were retired. Some of them were never raced because they were just never good racers. But an active racer dog is predisposed to a lot of things like arthritis and stiffness, because they usually have some injury history, or they've just run a lot of races, and so they've worn out their joints when they were younger, and as they get older, they're going to likely have some issues. So Izzy gets laser therapy from me, massage. She teaches my massage workshops with me, so she's at the head of the class on the table. She's more than happy to have people practice on her because she's very used to being handled. Within this last year, Izzy's arthritis has become worse, and she's developed something called a corn on her paw pads, which is something of a risk in greyhounds, but some other breeds do get them. It's like walking around with a stone in your shoe permanently. So Izzy is learning to use a pram. So she will walk. She's learning to walk with it fine. She's not totally keen on getting in it. So I'm doing classic desensitization training with her, so that when she is ouchy or too hot or just tired on a walk, she can get into the pram and I can keep walking for my own health. And she's not being put under stress.
I should show you Jess's bike.
On the way out, maybe.
Yeah, I will. I will too. Earlier we were talking about Christchurch and New Brighton and the number of dogs that we hear. But also you made some comments about what is needed for a dog-friendly city and how that benefits not only the, you know, the dogs that are well looked after, but it kind of rubs off on other dog owners. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, so there's a lot of a growing body of research around urban design. Mm. Again, probably coming from overseas because of the population base that exists in some of these countries, where if, you know, there's a proven connection to the mental health and physical health aspects of owning a dog in particular, because dogs need to be taken out for walks. So unlike cats that can just go in and out of a cat flap, a dog needs a certain level of exercise. And if the dog's being exercised, then hopefully the owner is as well. So there's also research around dogs being a social lubricant, which means if you are somewhat lonely or have other mental health issues or no mental health issues, but you're just a normal person, being out walking with your dog means that people engage with you. What is your dog's name? May I pet your dog? They get to know their neighbors. And all of that has a positive influence on communities. So, but there are things that don't make good dog communities. So communities that have too many restrictions so that you can never be out with your dog. Not allowing, you know, we're blessed with off-lead areas in Christchurch where people can take their dogs off-lead. We want everyone who is in an off-lead area, whether it's at the beach or in a dog park, to understand dog behavior so that it doesn't become a negative thing around attacks or aggression, but more that they're well-socialized. So back in the day when there were different authorities working on the earthquake rebuild, I did make a very long submission to them about what was needed to make Christchurch more dog-friendly. We now at least don't have a restriction in our central city about allowing your dog through. Dunedin still has that. So you can go to the central area of Dunedin and there are markers in the footpath that say, you know, you're entering the no dog zone. So we have made some improvements, but I think there's still a lot that can be done.
So what would you look for as the next best step?
I would like to see, I mean, we are seeing more cafes being dog friendly, allowing people to sit outside with their animals. There are a few now who have got food control plans in place that allow the dogs in inside. I'd like to see more of those because the weather in Christchurch isn't always dry and sunny. And then, of course, people, that includes people, that encourages people to be out in all conditions, in all seasons. I would like to see more retail shops become pet friendly. I know that Hornby Mall has had a few pet friendly nights over the course of the year. Okay. They started that last year, but not all the shops in the mall are prepared to allow animals in. There's a whole range of shopping experiences that could be open to well-behaved dogs and their owners, and that we're not seeing that in the central city.
You know, this thing about the well-behaved dog and the well-behaved owner. Out here, the thing that's the perennial that I notice on the Facebook discussions is the poo problem, the not picking up your dog's poo. The issue is, what do you do about those owners?
Yeah. So, we have to find a level of community standard. Yeah. And there's carrot and stick. And I think, and I have made submissions on this to the city council as well when their laws have come up. I think every now and again, it would be a wise use of our rates to have the city council dog control staff adopt plain clothes on a Saturday and perhaps issue a few fines for people who haven't picked up, because it's not appropriate for just our citizens to be in that position of having to challenge a fellow citizen. But I have plenty of friends who have been out with me and someone doesn't pick up and they're more than happy to yell out, "Oi, I think you missed your dog's dropping." I actually think that, you know, there's a public relations nightmare in poo that isn't picked up. If we want our people to accept us as dog owners having access to the area, this is part of our community contract, is picking up after them. And if you can't have that, then you're probably also potentially the type of person who tosses rubbish out the window when you're driving. And that shouldn't be acceptable either. So, you know, it's a level of responsible parenting. The child may have four legs and a fur coat and a tail, but it is a sense of what kind of parent are you going to be.
Thanks, Kathleen. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Kathleen's website is www.balancedog.co.nz. We are Dogs of New Brighton. We're online at plainsfm.org.nz and iTunes, or listen on the radio every second Tuesday and Sunday at 12:30 p.m. We'd love to hear from you. We're on Facebook at Dogs of New Brighton, or email dogsofnewbrighton@gmail.com. So from me, Michelle Hollis, and Jess, the dog. Thanks for listening. See you on the beach.
Stop.